This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run, 7:35 right now. I'm Melissa Idris. I've got Tan Chung Han here with me, as well as Julian Ng. It is Friday, the 3rd of March. And last night, so overnight, when the New York Stock Exchange snap began trading on the U.S. stock market, and it closed 44% higher than its IPO price. So it closed at $24.48 a share. They priced their IPO at $17 per share. So at $24, that puts the market cap of Snap at $33 billion.
That's right. You know, so in the recent weeks that we've been speaking about this story, you know, in the lead up to this highly anticipated IPO, we're going to recall that one of the concerns from investors, especially institutional investors, was that they were not given the kind of voting rights or having the kind of say in how Snap is run. But apparently, judging by these numbers, you know, like not that big a deal now. You know,
well, this is for existing investors playing among themselves, right?
Right.
But what about new shareholders, whether they're agreeable to that dual class share structure? But I do agree with your sentiment in the sense that this is kind of done and dusted because dual class share structures have been around for a very long time. You know, Facebook, Berkshire Hathaway even, you know, has that kind of structure and is the kind of attraction that New York and America has that attracts all these tech companies over there.
No, I understand that. But at more than 200 million shares that changed hands over the course of the trading day, that was 10% of the total volume of trade on the New York Stock Exchange. So I'm just wondering, I mean, clearly that, you know, it's been done before with the dual class shares, but are you telling me that tech companies now going forward, I feel like with this Snap IPO, it's really setting the tone for, you know, companies that are not profitable, that perhaps are slightly more opaque with their business models and the numbers, that, you know, investors are so forgiving. I wonder whether the lack of oversight from investors could lead tech companies to make bad decisions.
You know, I think that's an interesting point because, you know, like Julian said, now that the IPO is done and dusted, to borrow your words, now comes the hard part, right? Because now then you have to show how this is a sustainable business model. Keeping in mind, Snap lost $515 million last year alone, okay? Again, as costs balloon, right? So, you know, do you wonder, you know, okay, fine. I know what Julian often says, when it comes to these kind of deals, it's the banks those who structured the deal that really makes the killing, especially when you see how Snap was its opening game ranked second among the largest IPOs since 2012. The biggest was Twitter. But then you look at how Twitter has performed since. It opened at, what, $70 a share, now at about 16, 17. So Snap, yeah, now at $24.48 a share. We'll see where it goes from here.
You remember Twitter when it first went public? I remember that opening day of Twitter. It gained more than 70%. So it was priced at about $26 per share. It closed at $44.45. And I remember my jaw just being on the floor the whole morning.
You wish you got some.
Yeah, I know.
Exactly. But coming back to Snap, right? Even Spiegel, the CEO, has already said to investors that they want to focus more on user engagement rather than user growth.
Notice something there? The word profitability is not.
It's not exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Money is profit,
so
is not even part of the equation.
We are here in the new age of tech stock valuation, and it's a completely new paradigm that we need to wrap our heads around, because a lot of these internet-based companies don't make profits for a long time. And if they do, it's pretty minute to the kind of valuation that the market is assigning to them. And, you know, about that dual-class share structure, which gives more uneven power to its founding partners and founding shareholders. It's also, I think there is a concern about accountability and the fact that one man does not have one vote as far as these structures are concerned. But on the other hand, the markets are also very fixated with short-term stock and market performances that they sometimes lose sight of what tech companies need to do in their long-term vision. So, which is why that kind of structure is there to give the owners a kind of free rein to achieve their vision, right? Without those kind of vision, you would not see a stock like Google, or Amazon, or even Tesla going all out to get their stuff done.
Well, vision is one thing, but I think execution is another thing, right? Because, you know, it's great to have a vision, but then if you can't execute, and if you don't have the fundamentals upon which you can execute, you know, like really excellent business strategies and really propel your tech startup to the next level, you know, that is some, that's still a very big question mark for Snapchat.
But what does the next level mean, right? The next level is not represented by profitability. That is the point that these guys are saying, and that is what propelled Jeff Bezos to be one of the richest people in the world, in spite of a lack of profits from Amazon. Uber is valued at $75 billion with losses of $3 billion, right? This is a new paradigm of valuation, and where it leads to, I don't know.
Right, you know, and before we go into more Uber-related stuff, since you brought it up, I mean, real quick, perhaps another angle to consider is the scarcity of these kind of, you know, sexy tech stocks. Because the last one, well, this is the largest U.S.-listed tech IPO since Alibaba. And this was what? Alibaba was 3 years ago?
2014.
So, yeah, 2014. Yeah. You know, so it's been a while. So, you know, perhaps, you know, given the kind of, you know, bullish sentiment in U.S. equities, that's, you know, helping the Snap story here. You know, also the scarcity factor. I think these two components, you know, have lent itself well to what happened overnight.
Well, let's take a look at another tech company, Didi Chuxing. They have reportedly held informal talks with investors about raising billions of dollars to buy more time to build a profitable business model. Now, according to sources, Didi's investors, which I think is about 100 or so investors in Didi, they are kind of split down the middle, mixed reactions on whether more capital is needed. There's one camp that says fundraising will help Didi with developing more autonomous driving features, more autonomous driving technology. Whereas the other side of the camp says that, well, the firm has more than enough cash. They raised $10 billion last year. So that's more than enough to do whatever you need to do.
Well, perhaps that's half of the investors saying that. No, so it goes back again in keeping with the theme that we've been discussing, even with the Snapchat story and also this one. Right? Again, it underscores the crazy world, or the somewhat mind-boggling world of tech startups right now. Is this a sustainable business model? Melissa, you mentioned earlier, $10 billion.
Yeah,
that's how much Didi raised last year.
Is that not enough?
Exactly. So then to what end, though? To what end? I think that's a question that investors, not just for Snapchat, but also Didi and Uber, will have to ask themselves moving forward, right?
Have you been enjoying Uber's 99 cent ride over the last few days?
No.
I got my own car.
I didn't realize.
There you go, right? There you go. I mean, on the one hand, you have a protection of investors' interests, which are very clever people, so they don't really need any protection, right? And they go in with their eyes open whether these companies are making profits or not. But the other side of it is that we consumers, whether through some sneaky arrangement by these tech companies, are getting free rides. I mean, literally, we are getting free rides.
I see what you did there. Very good. Now, obviously, Didi is not the only one here, because when you look at Lyft, for example, you know, they're also looking to raise at least $500 million.
Okay, what do they want to use that money for? Because with Didi, they want to build self-driving cars, right?
Right. Well, I mean, essentially, you know, Lyft is, you know, I mean, they are trying to be that anti-Uber. So again, whether or not they can build that sustained challenge, you know, against Uber,
right.
I think
so
that's
Lyft,
a big one.
Lyft is just trying to build more of more market share, right, trying to give the competition run for their money. But with Didi, I think they are really worried about what Google and what Baidu are doing with driverless technology. They're saying that they want to remain ahead of the game, and therefore they need to raise this money. But again, I think that camp that is saying, well, 10 billion is enough, is saying, well, focus on what you've got going for you and build that business first.
Right, but then I mean, in speaking about just pursuing these new technologies, I mean, it's not to say that Uber has not been doing that. You know, they haven't been just sitting about and wasting the money, you know, with reckless abandon. I mean,
they,
99 cents.
They gave it to you. I mean,
they
translated that to a very cheap ride and driver compensation. And of course, the world of tech fundraising, I mean, tech companies have a voracious appetite for money. They need money all the time, right? And that's the part where profits are not being made, and a lot of this investment is really going into building of the ecosystem, building of the infrastructure, buying your buy-in, you know, as a user.
No, it seems like sustainable growth is like a secondary agenda right now. Right now, it's about just pushing the envelope, you know, finding what can be done, be it 99 cent rides or, you know, autonomous rides in Didi's case, you know. So it's right now about pushing the envelope.
I also have to point out that I'm a little concerned about Uber. I mean, there's been a lot of negative headlines about Uber, one misstep after the other. It all started with the boycott of the taxi in front of the airport
for
the airport, and the backlash that they got for their actions in that taxi strike. Then there were complaints about sexual harassment, and now there was that video of the CEO berating one of the Uber drivers. So all in all, several missteps after a misstep, and I'm concerned that that could have an impact to them.
Yeah, especially in the world of social media,
exactly,
where this kind of thing can just flip and everyone starts cancelling the account.
Right. You know, so, I mean,
it's very dangerous.
And then when you're watching that Uber video, or the video between, given the argument between the driver and the CEO, you know, one of the concerns was the falling prices or the falling income for these Uber drivers, right? So again, you know, it's one thing to offer 99 cents rides to your customers, but then how are you going to pay your employees, right? And I believe that is the ruling now. They are officially employees, I believe. Maybe not, don't quote me on that. You know, but again, fundamentals, right? Company culture, be it, you know, sexual harassment, you know, or how they tackle it, you know, what kind of price points they're entering in, you know, what kind of technologies they pursue, you know, do they diversify into other businesses, right? These are key questions that all tech startups have to ask themselves, and, you know, certainly we'll be keeping an eye out for them.
7:46 right now, we'll be back with a look at what's happening in the local business scene. So stay tuned to The Morning Run on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.